Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show with Space Nerds Kami and Benjamin. A little backstory before we talk about what we were just talking about before I said, hold on, let me hit record. Both Benjamin and Kavi come from Jewish backgrounds. So Kavi was telling me that actually my story about throwing food into the fire is reminiscent to a tradition when bread is baked in Jewish culture to then throw some bread back into the fire as what did you say again, as sort of an homage to
like I think priest. to the high priests of the temple. I think it's something that they used to do, you know, this was 2000 years ago when sacrifices meant taking something that you would eat and burning it, and so mm-hmm. As kind of like a throwback to the high priests of the temple period. I remember when, like, on Fridays my mom would always bake bread, challah bread, mm-hmm. for the Sabbath, and she would take a piece off the corner and throw it in and burn it. It's interesting how throwing away you've never heard of that.
I love challah so much. Like, the thought of someone taking challah and just throwing it away is just stunning to me.
Oh, why would you? Oh,
no, I love hearing new things about things that are supremely old.
I was saying that actually is sort of my intent of doing that, is to somewhat honor and give an homage to the Earth humans who came before us and harness science, like I said. And I actually, the inspiration behind that came from, there's actually two things I wanted to mention to you guys, and I don't know if you've seen these. Comes from a show called Origins, which I don't feel like is quite as like, whoa, as like Cosmos or One Strange Rock. Those are kind of my favorite spacey shows. But Origins is really cool in that each episode starts with what they believe is an origin point in human history. So Origins being humans figured out how to harness fire. And then through the whole episode, then they take you to at the end point being like, and now we use fire to send people to space. And so each episode has a theme along that concept of, we started here, let's go through history and look how that's changed over time and how it affects us today. And like the medicine one is like super cool because it starts back in Roman gladiator times, because there was a doctor and he's sort of what we base the Hippocratic oath off of. That would be Greek. What is the Roman guy? But anyway, this Roman guy, he was a doctor for gladiators, and his boss was like really, really mean to him. And his boss was like, you know, if this gladiator dies, like that's an investment I lost and that's on you, man. And so he really went experimental in how he would fix their battle wounds. And so he would heat up swords and then cauterize, you know, flesh wounds. Huh. And he just, you know, because he had so much at risk, and it was sort of like, I gotta save this person, otherwise I'm gonna lose my head. And so they start with that, and then like they go through all of history and time, and they show how Nostradamus was like super important during the Black Plague in helping people. Right, I know. And it just, I love that show. And now I want to watch it. But I was going to say, so let's bring it back to space. Let's bring it back to aliens. And
well, speaking of
Benjamin,
origins.
Origins, yes. Benjamin was talking about silicon life forms. And so obviously life as we know it are carbon-based life forms. There is a YouTube series called The Museums of Life. Have you guys seen those? They're very astrobiology themed. Oh my gosh, they're so cool. Okay. So these are like, you know, very hypothetical, kind of lofty, but they're like, we're going to look at this museum of alien life. And what we're using is basically the greatest hits of evolution. And what would life look like based on the conditions of a planet out there and like the amount of energy that they get, how far are they from their star, blah, blah, blah. Like what would evolve on that planet? It's really cool. And they do explore a little bit of silicon life based, forms. And then they also entertain even at the end the idea of like, well, what if some robots show up from another planet? That's obviously a sign of life. It's not alive, but
something made it,
something sent it, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. other robot things. Yeah, it's really cool. I'm gonna send you guys the link.
Please.
It's so good. But carbon and carbon-based life forms, I think I really want to start also this conversation with you guys looking at history. And how freaking awesome is it, though, that we understand the elements in the periodic table and how life builds from a chemical perspective, right? How cool is that we have this ability to understand ourselves, to now be able to broaden it out to, well, if it's here, what else is out there, right? Mm-hmm. In such a short amount of time.
It's really crazy to me to, you know, stop and think about the fact that we are a part of the universe that is studying itself, right?
Right.
Because we're made up of the same building blocks that make up everything else in the universe. You know, like Carl Sagan used to say, we're all stardust. And the fact that, you know, there's one part of a group of atoms that came from a exploding supernovae that, you know, ended up as being this rock next to me. And there's other parts of that same star that ended up in me. And I'm studying this rock, or I'm, you know, using this piece of the universe to study the universe. It's kind of mind-blowing.
It is. It's so amazing how quickly we have come to understand this. I'm sorry, I'm laughing at Kavi. He's coughing while muting his camera. but that we understand how to, like, it kind of goes back to that origins thing I'm talking about, how early humans learned how to harness this big, scary, out of control thing called fire and then use it to our benefit. It's so freaking cool. And so to understand carbon, and I mean, I'm thinking of the Bohr's model again, but how those outer electrons connect with other electrons, even though when Bohr even came up with that model, like, we had no imaging technology to be able to, like, prove that. It's amazing.
What's crazy to me is that, you know, science, I think Richard Feynman had said that we never really know anything. We're just getting better and better at approximating things with our models, uh-huh. right? Like, which is kind of a bummer as a physicist to realize that physicists don't actually know anything in an objective sense. We're just getting really good at saying approximately what's going on. And so I love how Bohr's model was, you know, incredibly accurate for its time and able to predict at kind of what distances, what energy differences these electrons would orbit around the nucleus of different atoms. But more so than that, after Bohr, as quantum mechanics developed and these more complex models of that are kind of probabilistic, meaning we don't know exactly, it's not like, you know, we grew up thinking that the model of an electron was like a planet, right, spinning around mm-hmm. the sun. It's not. It's kind of like a probabilistic distribution of where it might be at any given time. And if you measure it, then you kind of set its place. But that's a whole other episode. The fact that we've like developed these even more complex models, and they just get better and better at approximating and correctly predicting the physical nature of reality, that to me is mind-blowing. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about, we understand ourselves a little bit better, right? And the chemical molecules that make us. So I think very forward thinking then was people like Frank Drake and Carl Sagan, who were like, well, maybe there are other people or things out there. Maybe we should send a message, which has always been a controversial kind of thing in its own right. Should we be blasting out like, we are here, like the Who's on the clover in Horton, here's a Who. Should we be doing that? And our first attempt, I mean, outside of basic radio waves and like TV shows going out into space, our first real attempt was Arecibo. I'm going to target back to Benjamin here, because I always kind of find the Arecibo message funny when I see it. I feel like it is so Atari dated. Yes. And I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, what? But what can you explain to listeners? What was the point of the Arecibo message? Like, what was being conveyed in that?
The point of the Arecibo message, it was actually the second message sent to another world, but it was the first one was sent to Venus, so it doesn't really count. And it was just the Soviet Union talking about how awesome the Soviet Union was. But,
I want to see that one.
It's called the Morse message. It was all in Morse code.
Okay.
The Arecibo message was sent out to Messier 13, and it was very complex. It was a very, here we are kind of message, but also what we are. It's a whole bunch of, like Sarah said, if you can imagine an early 80s 8-bit Atari video game, there's a big figure in the middle of it and kind of looks humanoid-ish. But the way Frank Drake formulated the message was actually insanely clever. If you can imagine a very tall table of squares, the length of which are each prime numbers. So it's a prime number width and it's a prime number height. And in it, he wrote was in binary 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So they can give the readers, if there is one, key. And then the next thing he put down were, since we're talking about carbon, he put down the list of all the elements that make us. So he wrote the element number for all the different elements that are in us. And once he set down that language, oxygen, carbon, nitrogen, and so forth, he listed all the different molecules that make us. And then he went further and he listed out all the different, the four different molecules that make DNA. And that all is a big long column. If you read it from top down, you're slowly learning. This is how we do numbers. These are the elements. We know elements. These are molecules. We know how elements work together. This is us. These are the things that make us. And then it gets a little even more nutty. There's a map of our solar system at the bottom. And there is a little weird drawing of a supposedly, it looks weird. I don't buy it. But it looks like a giant radio telescope pointing up. And they did the best they could in the time that they did it with the technology they had, but it was still a very, very poignant message. I think it was very well thought out, keeping in consideration, everything has to be precise. Everything has to be clear. Every single positive or negative bit that they send has to have some sort of meaning to it. Otherwise, it would just be noise. And so
I was going to say, that's like the ultimate hit send and hopefully have a, oh shit, I misspelt that. And then you're like, it's too late. It's going across the universe.
It was the only message ever sent out from Arecibo. Everything else Arecibo did was receiving.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Yeah, that is one of the grand lasting legacies of Arecibo. I feel like that it sent that out, and then also, it was in the James Bond movie. I think that's probably its second biggest thing. but that's super. It's super cool to understand what was the intent, because truly, every time I see it, I'm like, I feel like I can hear 8-bit soundtrack, like playing music to it, like an Atari thing. And you're so right. It is what it is for the time and the technology that they had. And it kind of goes back to the point that I always respect chemistry classes that they go over history actually at the beginning, because it's so traceable. It's so early, really, in the scheme of our understanding of science and how we really were able to begin to understand chemistry and our place in carbon and stuff like that. And so the fact that it didn't take too much longer for people to be like, well, maybe there's something else out there. And Frank Drake also, in addition to helping conceive the messages of Arecibo, he also did Voyager. He helped with the, I think, the Pioneer plaques as well. Mm-hmm. And then he also came up with the Drake equation, which we are hitting a break point. So we will pick this back up about the Drake equation right when we get back. But this is a continuation of, are we alone? Are we the only carbon-based life forms out there? Benjamin's shaking his head no. Everybody's saying no. All right, well, we're going to continue the conversation when we get back. We're going to hit a little break quick. We'll be right back. You are listening to the Space Caveira Show with Benjamin and Kavi here on iRock Space Radio.